First Contact with Laurie Siegel is a production of .. Media and iHeartRadio.
What's happening now is the culmination of things that have been happening for a long time. You know, for a really long time, I've been looking at the impact that Facebook has been having on the world with some dismay. And actually, I've lost some sleep over, you know, laying in bed at night, looking up at the ceiling and kind of thinking, like, what have I done here?
We're living through some pretty surreal times. Most of the country is still shut down due to COVID-19. Over the last few days, we've seen protests and riots across the country following the police killing of George Floyd, an unarmed black man. All while one of the biggest tech companies on the planet, Facebook, is dealing with its own turmoil. It's not a coincidence. It boils down to this. Many believe President Trump's use of social networks makes situations like these worse. In this case, critics say some of his latest social media posts could incite violence and spread misinformation. Both Twitter and Facebook have taken different approaches. In some cases, Twitter has chosen to restrict or add warning labels to the president's more inflammatory posts. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg has chosen a hands-off approach. He says it's not the company's place to restrict free speech, and these posts don't violate Facebook's policies. But this comes down to a larger and incredibly important conversation about the limits of free speech and the role that tech companies play in civil discourse at a time when the stakes could not be higher. Over the last few days, employees at Facebook have staged virtual walkouts. They've voiced their opposition to the policy publicly. Some have even quit. Now, I've been covering Facebook for almost a decade. I've interviewed Mark Zuckerberg several times. This is a company that keeps things pretty close to the vest. Employees don't often speak out this vocally. So what we're seeing here, to use an overused word lately, is unprecedented. And yes, I know, we just wrapped up season one of the show, but this is simply too important to ignore. So my guest today on this bonus episode of First Contact is Barry Schnitt. He was Facebook's director of communications for 4 years from 2008 to 2012. These were pivotal years for Facebook, and he just published an article on Medium criticizing the company's position. The company was facing very different challenges back when he worked there, but I think his perspective is interesting and important, especially as other people are voicing similar thoughts. I'm Laurie Siegel, and this is First Contact. First of all, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm, I'm as well as can be. We call this First Contact. And I was trying to think because I've covered Facebook for a really long time and you worked at Facebook during 4 very, very important years. So I don't remember if we've been in contact, but I feel like we must have had a contact at some point.
Yeah, I have to believe that at some point I sent you a statement about some privacy controversy or something at the very least, but you know, I'm sure you were dealing with so many people there and I was dealing with so many journalists, but I knew your name and I know who you are for sure.
Well, and so take me back to your role. I mean, you were at Facebook for 4 very important years, right? Back, it was 2008 to 2012.
That's right.
What was your role there?
Yeah. So, my boss at Google, Elliot Schrage, moved over to Facebook and he said, you know, we're doing some really interesting stuff here and you should come. So I did. And my role was doing communications and some public policy work around privacy, safety, security, and content issues. And so what that ended up meaning was pretty much every controversy and crisis that Facebook dealt with during that time, I was a spokesperson for it and was working behind the scenes to try and figure out what our, not just our communications response was, but also what our kind of substantive response was to it.
Yeah, it was almost like, because I remember covering those days, like Facebook was growing at lightning speed during that time. And there were so many things that were happening with privacy, with the switch to mobile. Facebook was, you know,
right,
going public, launching a mobile app. There was just acquiring all these companies. You were kind of on the front lines.
Yeah, for some of that, for sure. Yeah. And it was it was a very exciting time and lots was happening. And it was also a very stressful time. But, you know, I'm proud of a lot of the work that we did then.
Yeah. And part of why I wanted to have you on today. You wrote this piece on Medium.
Yeah.
You know, speaking on Facebook's policies on free speech. And what a fascinating moment to be having this conversation, and what an important moment to have this conversation. A lot of this is happening in the news now, but this, it almost feels like we've been coming to this moment for a very long time. You know, I think over the last couple of weeks, it was a decision Zuckerberg made to not, you know, put a warning label on a Trump post. Jack Dorsey from right. Twitter made the decision to put a warning label on it. And it's really put into focus, I think, some of these issues that a lot of folks are pretty concerned about at the heart of social media. And what's very unique for our listeners is, like, having covered this company for a really long time, people don't really speak out. It's very rare to see people collectively speak out and really say things and kind of organize and come together, employees at the company. It's a very tight-lipped company.
Right.
And we're really beginning to see almost like a sea change of behind the scenes, people beginning to talk about these things. So maybe we can start with what, you know, what was the premise of what you wrote, and why did you decide to write it?
Well, yeah, it was actually, it was a lot of soul searching for me, you know, and I think you described it pretty accurately in that what's happening now is the culmination of things that have been happening for a long time. And it's not just about Trump, at least not for me. But, you know, for a really long time, I've been looking at the impact that Facebook has been having on the world, with some dismay. And actually I've lost some sleep over, you know, laying in bed at night, looking up at the ceiling and kind of thinking, like, what have I done here? Because, you know, I joined Facebook with the idea of, you know, changing the world for better. And I think, you know, what you're seeing in terms of employees and former employees speaking out is because they don't just care about Facebook, but they care about the world. And that's why they worked at Facebook. And when they're seeing the potential that Facebook is having to negatively impact the world, they want to do something about it. And they feel like Facebook can do something about it. And that was part of the premise of my writing, is that, you know, Facebook, in the time that I worked there, in the time before, and the time since, has overcome, you know, tremendous challenges. And every single time they rise to it and overcome, you know, whether it's facing Google, which was a behemoth, or MySpace, which at the time was a behemoth, or, you know, you mentioned the change to mobile, you know, these are things that they took from nothing and they made a tremendous success out of them. And I think they have the opportunity to do that here with, you know, actually being a force for, you know, information and for understanding and for truth, but they're not doing that right now. And so my goal was actually to try to rally them to that end, because I know that they have the ability to come up with some really innovative solutions that could have an impact on the world. And I think don't necessarily need to restrict free speech. And I think that's a false choice. And those are the words I use in my writing. And I believe that strongly.
Yeah. I mean, can you give us your argument about, because, you know, I know Zuckerberg really, more so than any tech founder I know, really digs his heels in when it comes to this argument on free speech. You know, when he says, when Trump was posting and saying, it was a post that said something like, when the looting happens, the shooting happens, or something. And people right. were very concerned this was going to promote violence. But Zuckerberg's argument is that Facebook will not be the arbiter of truth, and that it's a slippery slope. This has always been the company's argument, and it's not changing. Now, what you say in this piece is that a lot of things have changed in the time that you guys drew up those community standards, and the time that this happened, and that words have more meaning and are more powerful in a different way because a lot of things have changed. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah. So, you know, in 2008, you know, there were a lot of discussions about how to handle speech on Facebook. And the main conclusion was, you know, Facebook is going to have a hands-off approach to it. And I think that made sense in 2008, you know. One, there were the professional arbiters of truth, and I believe the press are those and have been for centuries, you know, were much stronger and had much more distribution. I think Facebook was growing, but still relatively small. And that's changed, you know, and Facebook was not a source where their people looked for news and information. You know, it was a place where you looked for photos from your friends or, you know, funny mm-hmm. memes, et cetera. And all of that has changed, you know, dramatically in that, you know, the press has, you know, newsrooms have been decimated. You know, the economics of news have changed dramatically. Facebook is a news and information source for literally billions of people. And I don't think a decision made with the variables in 2008 still holds in 2020, especially if you look at the consequences. You know, everything from Brexit to elections here in the US to elections around the world to health information during this pandemic are all being threatened by disinformation that is found and hosted by Facebook. And I just don't see how you can look at the consequences of the decision you made more than a decade ago and see how dramatically bad they are and say, yeah, that was definitely still the right decision today.
Right. I mean, it's a pretty powerful statement to have been an employee somewhere years ago, right? And to say that you've been losing sleep over decisions you made. I mean, that is a pretty powerful thing to say. If you go back, like, what are you losing sleep over specifically?
Well, I mean, I can bring it to, you know, just like a few weeks ago. You know, if you saw this Plandemic video, which was a very slick, highly produced piece of gross misinformation about the current pandemic. And it was liked 2.5 million times on Facebook, which means it was seen by many more people. And so that's literally millions of people who were misinformed about a current health crisis. Now, I believe that many of those people will make a decision based on what they saw in that video through Facebook that will be detrimental to the health of themselves or their family. You know, I don't think it could get more serious than people will die because of something they saw on Facebook. And you're right. I lost sleep over that. And I continue to.
You know, you talk about, when we spoke before, like a key moment, and you mentioned like intent bias in this piece, when you're talking through some of these issues. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I worked at Facebook and other tech companies, you know, you build these products and you think you know what they're going to do, but you never really know until they're out in the world and people are using them. And they always use them in ways that you didn't intend. And sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad. But, you know, your intention is good. You know, you had the intention to give them free speech or allow them to share or allow them to create, et cetera. And so your intent was good. And then you look at the outcomes and hopefully there are some good outcomes and there are bad. But because of your intent, you focus more on the good outcomes than the bad. And I think that's been happening at Facebook for years. And I think it's happening today in that you see them write the stories of success, you know, whether it's selling products or the organizing of groups. And I provide examples, you know, they tout this sisterhood of truckers, which I think is amazing. But at the same time, you know, Mark looks at all of that. And then he says, I don't see how Facebook could have impacted an election. Like, he's too smart to not see that those things are the same. You can't have all of this good and organizing and people changing their minds in a good way, and then not have the same thing happen in a bad way.
So then having worked closely with him and having worked closely at the, I would say, the company and being kind of the lead on communications, it could be crisis communications, you say he's too smart for, then what do you think it is?
Well, I haven't talked to Mark in, you know, nearly a decade. And so I can't know what's in his head. But, you know, the two things that my guess are, one is the intent bias. I think he continues to look at all of the good that Facebook is doing in the world. And I agree with him that there is a lot of good. And he says that it's more than the bad. I would say that's not good enough. And I would say the bad is growing. And that ratio is changing in a way that I think is bad for the world. And two, you know, when I worked at Facebook, there was something that Mark used to say a lot. And he had a chart and everything. And he would continually say, we're 1% done. And that was in response to people being too conservative and people working to protect what we'd already achieved rather than taking risks to achieve the 99% that was left. And I feel like maybe for him and others at the company that ratio has changed and that maybe they're feeling like there is more to protect than there is to achieve for Facebook and that Facebook maybe is too important in the world to risk. But I would argue that if we save Facebook, but the world burns, that we've made the wrong trade-off.
Okay, we've got to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. More with my guest after the break. It's a nuanced argument too, right? Like, it'd be too easy to simplify this and say, well, you should take this down, right? Like, you look at Jack Dorsey, you know, he's in the line of fire with the president right now.
Right.
And now having put some of these labels on Trump's tweets, people are calling on Twitter to put labels on all these other world leaders' tweets, you know, and we're wondering, well, why does this get a label and this doesn't get a label? And from me having covered tech throughout the years, it certainly seems like sometimes you get very confused about who's making the decision, why the decision gets made. And those standards don't seem to always apply in the same way, and they change quite a bit. So with Facebook and the argument of it's a slippery slope, can you see it from the other side? Like, how do you weigh that argument right now in this current moment that this could lead to censorship? It could lead to a lot of other unintended consequences for the platform.
Yeah, well, the slippery slope, it's such a funny, you know, buzzword that, that I, you know, people invoke in all kinds of situations. And I've heard it in meetings for, you know, decades. And I've come to realize that in a lot of ways, it's a cop-out. In some ways, it means, yes, we know the right thing to do in this situation, but we're not going to do it because we don't know the right thing to do in some of these future situations.
Right.
And if that's the case, you know, that again, that feels like a cop-out. You know, I know that the decision that I'm going to make here is wrong, but that's okay because I don't know what to do about these other situations. And I make the argument that Facebook is too smart, has too many resources, you know, too much innovation, too much technology to just use a slippery slope as a way of not doing the work to figure out, yes, we know the right thing to do, and let's work towards figuring out what the right thing to do on these other situations will be, and make those decisions as we go. And it will be hard, and there will be some inconsistencies, and they will make mistakes. But I think all of that is less bad than the current situation, which is rampant misinformation, rampant divisiveness, rampant incitement of violence. And I think it's worth the risk.
You know, it's interesting because when Zuckerberg testified in front of Congress for the first time, I remember I was there, and day one was kind of the senators just asking like random questions about the internet. And it was kind of like, you know, I remember everybody was kind of like, okay, the takeaway here is also that, you know, the government needs to educate themselves when it comes to technology. But day two, I remember thinking this, Barry, I was like, day two is really interesting because you had Zuckerberg in front of a lot of House members who were all asking him about taking down content and who were all, this was, you know, what, I think this was a couple of years ago now, right? But who were all talking about, did they have a liberal bias? And you know, this is now we have another backdrop, which is regulation and the power of these big tech companies. And before all this whole pandemic happened, we had the conversation about, are these companies monopolies? Which, you know, I think that's a little bit, we've pushed it aside just a teeny bit because there's so many other huge things happening in the world. But these companies are under a lot of pressure right now. And I make no judgment either way. I think, you know, Zuckerberg, I think it's, you know, having interviewed him many times and seeing some of this stuff, I don't get the sense that it's all just political, right? Or that he's only just doing it all for the money. I actually think if you meet him, it's really different. But do you think that part of this could be outside forces too? I mean, and not just with this, but with a lot of the decisions that Facebook is making and a lot of the pressure that they're under right now.
Yeah. No, I 100% think there's outside forces at play here. And that's kind of what I was meaning to talk about with the company working more to protect than to take risks to achieve, is that I think those outside forces are real and scary. You know, I don't think any company wants to draw the ire of the president. I mean, I think he's shown that he will use whatever government levers he has at his disposal to make things difficult. I think Jeff Bezos is an example. You know, the work that he's doing against Section 230 that, you know, that has been described as the 26 words that created the internet. He basically wrote an executive order to try to rescind that, you know, and that would be a dagger to the heart of all internet companies, I believe. And so I don't think it's the right answer, but it's an example of you're not wanting to get on the bad side of the president in this current administration. And I think that is playing very much into some of the decisions that the company is making. And I don't think they're being honest with themselves and certainly with the public that that's what's at play.
You know, I think it's important to say, like, you and a lot of, and we should mention that, like, a lot of other employees are speaking out. Some have resigned. Some are speaking out kind of behind the scenes. We just obtained a letter that folks wrote. It was a lot of early employees that wrote. You know, all these employees, and I think this is a really important point, aren't saying Facebook is terrible, Facebook is bad. I'll read like a little, I thought this was so powerful. This is from the letter that a lot of early employees, and I'm assuming many who you worked with,
for sure,
got together and they collectively wrote. Like this is a letter, and correct me if I'm wrong, this was a letter to Mark, right? That they wrote, and it was published in the New York Times, but it was,
yep,
it was kind of more of a petition for talking about the standards. But they wrote, as early employees on teams across the country, we authored the original community standards, contributed code to products that gave voice to people and public figures, and helped to create a company culture around connection and freedom of expression. We grew up at Facebook, but it is no longer ours. You know, I think that's such a, I gotta say, and maybe this is me being a little inside baseball as someone, you know, who's looked at this company since, I would say 2009 or 2000, probably around 2010. But that's, you know, seeing a lot of these names, I want our listeners to understand the names on, at the bottom of these, and even you, right? You led comms, like no one at Facebook spoke like this or spoke out like this for a very long time. So I think it's a really big deal that people are really beginning to question some of these decisions.
I agree. You know, and those are, I know most of those people, they're a lot of people smarter than me who signed that letter, and they're dear friends. And in fact, it just coincidentally, I sent my, you know, draft post to one of them, said, hey, I'd love your feedback. And they said, well, that's a coincidence. We happen to be working on something of our own. But yeah, I mean, I think it's collectively my experience that of lying awake at night thinking, you know, what have I done is not unique. And I think, you know, seeing the impact that Facebook has had on the world and being proud of it for a very long time, and then having that gradually become, you know, forms of shame and dismay is pretty powerful. And seeing, you know, it's these are not, you know, people who are cranky critics, you know, the kind of people who always criticize Facebook about both doing too much and too little, being too far to the right and too far to the left. You know, these are people who joined the company willingly and poured their hearts and souls into it for years and are really shocked and dismayed about what it's, how it's, not of what it's become, but the impact it's having on the world. And I say, I have a distinction there because I don't think it's become evil. I got that response to some people, you know, Facebook is evil. And I said, well, you know, that's not a solution. You know, if you, I'm in all ears, you know, let's provide some action. But I do think Facebook is not understanding the negative impact that it's having on the world. And I think it is not paying enough attention to potential solutions and certainly not putting enough effort towards developing those solutions. And I wish I knew the exact answer. But I don't, but I do know that Facebook has the ability to come up with those answers. And I think that's part of what's so dismaying to people who used to work at the company is that we know that Facebook can rise to these challenges and has, you know, limitless possibilities. And they're, for some reason, it feels like they're not trying to do that. And we just don't understand why.
What do you think a solution is? I know they've created projects for journalists. They have an outside almost editorial board for content now. So they have done quite a bit over the last years for some of the criticism they've received on content decisions with everything happening in journalism. I mean, what do you think is the solution?
Well, I'll answer the opposite question first. I'll tell you what I don't think is the solution. You know, like I know Facebook somewhat. And I'll tell you one thing that I believe is that Facebook doesn't outsource things that are really important to the company. Never has, never will. And everything that you mentioned is effectively an outsourcing. The journalism project, hey, here's some money. You guys go do some interesting work. Fact check, hey, third parties, here's some money. Go do some interesting work. The board, hey, third parties, why don't you make some decisions for us because we can't make them. And the amounts of money that they put towards these efforts sound big, but they are rounding errors in the Facebook universe. And I think if they were serious about a solution to misinformation, to the incitement of violence, and just to coming up with a new way to treat content, that they would do something internal. They would devote engineers to it. And that's the number, you know, having worked at Facebook, that's the number one signal for whether Facebook thinks something is important. How many top engineers are working on it? And everything that you described, I would argue the answer, the number is roughly zero. And that's probably a little hyperbole because there's definitely engineers working on these related problems. But the things that they're touting as potential solutions to this are not actual solutions. They are they're band-aids. And, you know, as I write, you know, I think we're actually hemorrhaging truth and civility on Facebook. And these are a start, but they're just at the margins. And I think they need to devote significant resources. I propose, you know, kind of a symbol in my writing that they just suspend their stock buyback, which they've committed another $14 billion to doing that. That's the kind of resources that this is going to take. And I don't think they literally need to find $14 billion. They have the money. Mostly what they need to find is the will. And again, I don't know exactly what they need to do, but I know they need to commit to doing it. And that's not even something they're willing to do thus far.
You know, it's interesting. I remember interviewing Facebook's former head of security, who was there for context, like during, it was their team that discovered Russian influence. He was there for the election interference, right. Alex Stamos. And something he said to me, this was for a documentary I did on Facebook, something he said to me was, you know, for a very long time, the growth team, they had more engineers at the growth team and it was bigger and the building was bigger than for the security team. So I think that's an interesting point you make about engineers. And to give a sense, like these are human problems, right? And so yeah. Like, and you're talking about technology, but the real problem, this is not just Facebook, this is maybe beyond Facebook. And for a lot of the bigger tech companies in the time I covered it, and they grew into these huge companies, is I don't think they anticipated, when you talk about intent bias, I think there was an inability to look at the messy, complicated human problems that would happen in some capacity.
Right. Yeah. And you know, the intent is important because I think their intention is good and their hypotheses were not crazy, right? I mean, what Mark says is, you know, we think people should decide, right? But, you know, I think we can agree there is truth and there are lies. You know, there is civil discourse and there is inciting violence. And I think we would all agree that truth should get more distribution and attention than lies. And we should agree that civil discourse should get more attention than inciting of violence. And what Mark would say was, yes, and people will figure that out and they will decide for themselves. But A, that's not what's happening. And B, some people aren't equipped to discern. And C, you know, there are very powerful forces that are deliberately trying to trick them into thinking that one is the other. And for Facebook to see all of that and throw up its hands and say, no, we're just free speech and we'll let the people decide, I think is wrong. And that's just what I'm trying to get them to realize.
Right. Looking at this letter that a lot of the early employees, and do you, like some of the early employees, these are early architects of Facebook, but there are all sorts of people who signed this, who co-created this letter, and we'll put it in our show notes. I would suggest people read it just because whether you agree with it or not, it's really an interesting look at, I think, how people are viewing this moment in time and the implications.
I agree 100%.
And the implications. You know, what some of these folks said in the letter was, since Facebook's inception, researchers have learned a lot more about group psychology and the dynamics of mass persuasion. You know, we understand the power words have to increase the likelihood of violence. You know, I remember being at CNN, it was outside when the bomb that was pulled out of the building, this was like a year ago or something. Right. Someone had sent this bomb and it ended up in the mailroom. Thank God the incredible security at the time had found this. But, you know, it had stemmed from, I think, posts and tweets. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, like this is actually happening. You know, it had started there and the threats had started there. And you know, and then I was watching a bomb pulled out of our building where I had been for 10 years. And it was such a, maybe as someone who just has spent my adult career covering tech, it was just such a moment for me thinking like, wow, the implications like can be very real life. So I thought that line in this piece was really interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's a good point. You know, this is not academic or theoretical. You know, it's happening every day. People are being radicalized, you know, based on what they're seeing on Facebook. And by the way, it's not just Facebook. I wrote about Facebook because I worked there. I know more about the company. You know, the same could be said for pretty much every technology company that hosts user-generated content. You know, I think Twitter has come up with unique solutions for Trump's tweets, but there's a lot of work that they need to do too, you know, around abuse and around misinformation, et cetera. You know, and so I just don't know how to tell them what to do. But right. Yeah, this is not happening in a faraway place. This is not some dystopian future that we can imagine. You know, people are walking into a pizza parlor with an assault rifle because they believe that it is a child sex ring, you know, with the presidential candidate, you know, the Pizzagate. Yeah. You know, it's absurd, but it's literally happening. People are planting bombs at CNN because they believe that, based on what they've seen on Twitter and Facebook, that, you know, you guys are the root of all evil. And that's something that we really need to take more seriously.
Okay, we've got to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. More with my guest after the break. I guess the question for me is, I mean, this is such a tight-lipped company, right? You know, even covering Facebook, it's a fascinating company, and it has so much impact, and it has completely transformed the world. But this is not a company where employees like freely generally tweet about how they feel, or Facebook, I should say, post on Facebook about how they feel. That is, you know, that's not something that we've seen. We're in the lens of a global pandemic. We have protests and real anger and, you know, rightfully so in this country and around the world, given what's happening with the racial divisions and racism. And I think looking at the fact that people at Facebook and hearing what I'm hearing from kind of former employees and employees about people really kind of that turmoil behind the scenes, what do you think it is about now that's, you know, causing people to maybe take the risk to say something when maybe they wouldn't have before?
Well, I think it's two things. One, that it's not theoretical, you know, anymore. It's not academic. You know, we are seeing, it's not isolated. You know, it's not just, you know, one incident of, you know, a crazy person that you could dismiss. You're seeing it, you know, simmering across the country and around the world, just people being incited to violence and radicalized. And two, you know, you hit on every one of it. The stakes are so high. We are literally in the middle of a global pandemic. You know, nearly 500,000 people have died. The smart people who know about viruses say many more people will die, likely in the fall. And in the meantime, Facebook is providing health misinformation to them. You know, as I write, you know, the only way that the stakes could be higher is if we were on the brink of a world war. And I don't think we are right now, but I don't see the logical conclusion of this being a lasting peace, right? You know, there will be some violent outcome of all of this if it is not checked in some way. And in the meantime, in the short term, a lot of people will make health decisions that will be detrimental to their life, and Facebook will be complicit in it. And I think that's just something that's got to change.
You know, Facebook has always come under fire throughout, by the way, as someone who's been on the other side of it, as a journalist who's asked very hard questions, interviewing Zuckerberg, right, in the midst of Cambridge Analytica and during some of the harder moments in the company has always, you know, I feel like they've played defense for a very long time. And so there is, I think, a certain mentality around that and knowing that you're going to get criticized, but you kind of like, you just keep going if you have the mission. I think that's in the DNA of Facebook, if I could kind of define it in any way.
Sure.
Do you think that this time is any different, that they'll listen to some of the former employees or some of the, you know, some of the, maybe because it's more people behind the scenes? I know how much Zuckerberg does value the people he works with.
The short answer is I don't know. You know, having said all the things that I say and believe about Facebook, I am almost a decade removed from the company. I still have a lot of friends there. But, you know, I do think the opinion of the employees is very highly valued. And that is something that in the past has moved the company. There was a transcript that I read of an all company meeting earlier this week. And it seems like, you know, for the most part, at least the vocal people are very against the current stance of the company. I am sure that is weighing on the leadership. Whether it makes a difference, I don't know. Whether the external pressure will make a difference, I don't know. The one thing that's unique about the external pressure right now is that it is so divided. In most cases, when I was at Facebook, there were cases where people were, you know, on both sides of an issue telling us we were wrong, but mostly a united front telling Facebook it was wrong. You know, you're doing the wrong thing on privacy. You're being too open. You're not taking down this objectionable content. But this is a case where people on the right are saying you're censoring too much and you're taking too active a role in content, and people on the left saying you're taking an active role enough. And when it's divided like that, I don't know how you make the calculation for, you know, which is the path of least resistance. I do think Facebook has made that calculation in the past. And right now, because the forces of, you know, leave the content alone are in power, I worry that they will make the decision that that is the path of least resistance.
Well, in this letter too that these employees sent, they said Facebook isn't neutral and it never has been. Making the world more open and connected, strengthening communities, giving everyone a voice, these are not neutral ideas. Fact-checking is not censorship. Labeling a cult of violence is not authoritarianism. I mean, covering a lot of these companies, it was for so long, hands off, we're neutral, we're not responsible, we're not media companies. There's always been this tension for the last decade. And a lot of these companies, as you talk about those 26 words that save the internet based off of Section 230, right? Which makes it so these companies to a degree don't have to be liable for certain content. But it certainly seems like we are seeing a shift and that words have more meaning and have consequences that are far reaching. And the stakes seem incredibly high in that I think the debate is certainly open of you know, and you look at, I keep looking at Jack Dorsey and what he's kind of walked into as well. And now all the calls to do all these other things, and where are they going to draw the line? So it certainly feels complicated.
Yeah, it is. And I tried to address that in that, you know, and let Facebook know, you know, I know this is not an easy problem. I know it's going to be hard, but to try to give them the courage to do it and do something about it. And I think the writing in the letter from my former colleagues and my friends is brilliant. And those insights are so spot on. And I hope Facebook listens.
I thought what you said about Facebook's strengths are its weaknesses as well, which is, you know, it's always been the story of technology, right? Which is it can do such incredible things and it can also do such terrible things too. And we always just walk this fine line and it can get incredibly murky, you know? And I think what we've seen over the last couple of years, or some of, and maybe even the last, not even a couple of years, even before then, really, you know, these ethical issues that I think a lot of these people are working through, and sometimes better than others.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, for Facebook, you know, their biggest strength is the connections that they've created and fostered and facilitated between literally billions of people. And there's a lot of benefit to that. But, you know, we're also realizing that it creates some vulnerabilities, and there are evil forces in the world that are exploiting them. And I just think there's more that Facebook can and should do about it. And I hope they will.
From like on a personal note, you have been at Facebook, you've been at Pinterest, you've been a part of these companies that really have kind of shaped people and behaviors and whatnot. What is your takeaway on people?
Wow, that's a really broad question. What's my takeaway on people?
You've kind of been in the fray. You've been in it. You've watched things built. You've built things. You know, you were in the line of fire at Facebook. Pinterest is a more delicate company, I would say, knowing that company. It's a more delicate culture too. But what's, you know, you've just had such extraordinary, I would say, experience kind of being in these places and being on the front lines.
Well, yeah, I mean, what I've observed in those companies and what I felt is that, you know, they, most of the time, the overwhelming amount of time, the people want to do the right thing and they want to change the world for better. And that is at least a large part of what's motivating. And I believe it's what's motivating Facebook. I believe it's what's motivating Mark. I believe, unfortunately, in some cases, they are blind to the consequences of the decisions they're making. I believe they are not giving enough weight to the bad outcomes, you know, as I state. But I do believe these people are good and they're trying to do good and they want the best for the world. And I think that's why, you know, to your point that they're usually silent, but they're not being silent right now because they are seeing that intention is not being realized, and in fact, quite the opposite. They may be actually damaging the world, and they don't want to, and they want to do something about it. And so my whole goal was to try to give them some ammunition and maybe put some form around their thoughts and ideas to move the discussion forward towards some action. And I hope it gets there.
And you think action would be labeling more of this content?
Well, I think it would be not saying we're taking a hands-off approach to content. I think it would be taking some responsibility for the content. And, you know, again, there are lies in the world and there are truths. And having a hand in making sure the truth is more seen than the lies, I don't think is a bad thing. And I don't think it's censorship. There is civil discourse and there's inciting violence. I don't think taking an active hand and saying this civil discourse is of more value than this inciting violence is a bad thing. And that's just a bridge that they haven't been willing to cross. And I'm urging them to cross it. And I don't know whether that means one will be labeled. I don't know whether that means the distribution will be throttled on one and surged on another. I don't actually know the solution, but they need to cross that bridge first and commit to having those outcomes be an actual goal. You know, free speech is not an outcome. Free speech is a means to an end, but the end right now is damaging the world. So how do we get to an end that actually makes the world better? And that's the thing that I'm hoping they'll get to.
What do you say to the folks? You know, anytime some people like come and speak out at Facebook or whatnot, I would say, yeah, I saw an executive, I think it was Dan Rose or something, say like, you know, just early people who have no connection or something like that. He was saying, you know, don't even know the nuances or complexities of this argument. You haven't been there in a while. So to defend yourself, Barry, what do you say to the executives or the people who say, well, you haven't been there in a while, you don't know? Why do you get to say something?
Well, so I know Dan Rose, and I think he was having an emotional reaction to feeling that his life's work is attacked and people he cares about and is loyal to are attacked. And I don't think that tweet was actually reflective of him. I think he more meant, you know, kind of what you're saying is that, you know, you guys have not been at the company for a long time. You don't know the content of the discussions. They have been deep and endless, and you should trust the people that work there. And to that, I would say, I do trust the people to work there, but I think you are not realizing the consequences of those decisions. I am sure they were thoughtful. I'm sure they were endless. I'm sure they were as deep as they could possibly be, but I believe they were wrong. And I believe the evidence supports my position and not yours. And you have a responsibility to do something. And even more than that, I think you have the ability to do something. And I think it could be a tremendous success and opportunity for the company and for the world, even more importantly, if they would seize it. And I urge you to do so.
And, you know, and also when you talk about the decisions people at the company are making, I feel like I couldn't end this interview without saying, you know, I mean, I think it was reported that there was one person of color or one woman of color in the room when one of the decisions was made on the Trump post, you know? So when we talk about, and this is a larger conversation, when we talk about the decisions that these folks are making, who are the people making the decisions and are they diverse and a diverse group of perspectives? I think that's something we have to hold on to that I think we're seeing it come to a head now in this moment. You know, I mean, there's just not enough different voices and perspectives. And this isn't just Facebook. I mean, this is all of Silicon Valley has a massive problem.
Yeah, I agree with that. And as you say it, I wish I had brought it up in my writing, but you know, and it's diversity across every dimension, race, religion, socioeconomic status, education. You know, the people who work at Facebook and are making the decisions are highly educated, highly sophisticated. They're not seeing this stuff in their feeds because they're not posting it, and the people that they associate with know the difference. But lots of other people are seeing it in their feeds, and they don't know that it's a lie. They don't know that it's inciting of violence in some cases. You know, it's, and I think if more of the leadership team had the perspective of the people who were seeing all of the content on Facebook based on their race, their religion, their economic status, you know, where they come from, I think they would have a different opinion of the impact because they're not seeing it themselves because they're not exposed to it.
And then I guess last question, have you had other folks from inside the company reach out to you after kind of speaking out and writing? Do other people share your feelings?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, the response has been fairly overwhelming. You know, I didn't know if anyone would listen or care. It seems like people are and do, which is, it's just gratifying. And I would say the most common response that I got from current employees, former employees, and actually even people who never worked at Facebook, but feel a connection to it in some way, because probably because they love the product and have been on it for years, is some form of, thank you for writing this. You encapsulated some feelings and thoughts that I've had for a while. And so I am one person who you know, had my own ideas, but it seems like they are shared by a lot of people, and I hope that gives them some weight to Facebook and that they do something, because I want them to. I know they can. I think they should. And if they did, I think it could be tremendously valuable to the world.
And last question, I promise.
Sure.
You were leading the charge in comms during some of these very intense situations. Privacy was a huge one back when you were there.
Right.
So you kind of went into the line of fire. What advice would you give Mark right now?
Oh, man. What advice would I give Mark right now? I tried to give some of it, you know, without naming him in my writing. And I think it is to pay attention to the outcomes, not just your intent, and to have courage against the critics who have power to limit and damage your business and your company, and to have faith in your ability to do something really remarkable for the world in a new way, in a way that you haven't before, and not just enabling free expression, but an outcome of actually informing people and improving their knowledge of the world and their understanding of the world and enabling them to make the right decisions about it. And I think that's something that he has the ability to do, and I urge him to do it.
First Contact is a production of ... Media, executive produced by Laurie Siegel and Derek Dodge. This episode was produced and edited by Sabine Jansen and Jack Regan. The original theme music is by Xander Singh. First Contact with Laurie Siegel is a production of ... Media and iHeartRadio.